We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, the Nets finally bounced back with a win. Wasn't the prettiest thing, but they picked it up 128-124 over the Miami Heat. How are we feeling?
Yeah, scary hours was the officiating tonight, Nick.
Yeah, it really was. It was some tough officiating, and we typically don't like to criticize the refs, but we'll get into that plenty more. But as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where do you want to start?
We should start with, Nick, that apparently the hug police is out in full force. Bam Adebayo had an awesome game, and we like to give credit where credit is due. He was incredible, but the security was preventing Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan from giving him some love. But in all honesty, Kyrie Irving was much, much better tonight. He led the way. We saw some clips on the Yes Network of him sort of talking to the team. And you could just see, like, I know you've sort of seen his mentality and such and sort of been able to observe, you know, what his mindset is like. But it seemed to me tonight that Kyrie was leading this team in a lot of respects tonight.
Yeah, I thought this was a great basketball game, and I know he scored 38 against the Cavs, but I'd rather take this 28-point game. You know, I think it was 15 down the stretch in the fourth, maybe even more, but I love the leadership. I love the defensive energy. I criticized him yesterday because I felt like he didn't show effort on the end of the floor. Tonight, you saw him picking up people half court at the logo or whatever it might be, and like you said, a lot of leadership across the board with different things. So, you know, shout out to Kyrie, really, really stepped up and when the team needed it. And I thought it was crucial for a lot of the shots he did, especially when, you know, James Harden was being extremely passive. You know what I mean? So you did have Kyrie Irving picking it up and hitting some of those big shots.
Yeah, I thought he was incredible, especially in the last quarter. He had like at least 10 points, including some absolutely clutch buckets. And he was, again, apart from his pick and roll defense, I thought the rest of his defense, when he was one-on-one with like a Dragic or a Robinson or sometimes none has a bit more size and girth to him that sort of troubled Kai a little bit. But I thought overall tonight, you know, I wrote down some notes. I'm probably going to check over some film, but he was great. I thought that despite the fact that his numbers were much better in the two Cleveland performances, I thought that his impact tonight, and there was maybe only one or two possessions in comparison to maybe four or five possessions in the previous Cavs road trip that I thought he was taking too much. He was iso-balling too much. But I thought he helped break the zone down. And especially in that fourth quarter when the Nets needed offense, like you mentioned, James Harden wasn't doing it apart from, you know, a Bam at a bio, what is it called again?
Goaltend,
that's the one. My words aren't here today. But I thought Kyrie Irving was incredible in that fourth quarter. And it doesn't hurt to have Kevin Durant come back and do his thing either.
Yeah, no, I agree, Jack. I thought Kyrie was really good. And defensively, like, this is the effort level that'll be okay. He's never going to be a great pick-and-roll defender. He's going to have issues in other aspects. But, you know, the leadership, too, and knowing when to step up. And I felt like early in the game, he was more in the flow of the offense, where it wasn't really the ISO possessions. We didn't get into the fourth quarter when the Nets really needed it because Miami was going on a run and they weren't really hitting shots. But let's talk Kevin Durant. I mean, how can you consistently score 30 quietly? Like, he just does it just in the flow of the game, and it's just beautiful. I mean, 11 of 19, 4 of 7 from 3, 4 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 blocks, and I thought his defense on Bam was better than anybody else on the Nets.
Yeah, look, Bam's just offense was just too good for the Nets defense, and Kevin Durant just had, you know, a bit more length about him, which troubled him, than, say, Jeff Green, DeAndre Jordan, and Reggie Perry especially. But yeah, Kevin Durant was incredible on both ends of the floor tonight, and there was times where it's just like he could have had 40 if the refs actually gave him some freaking calls. That Kelly Olynyk call, Nick, is one of the worst calls I have ever seen. One, Michael Grady tweeted out, and Kelly Olynyk might as well have been, like, suffocating Kevin Durant. His defense was that poor and physical.
I've seen fouls like that get reviewed for a flagrant.
You're right. And his feet were in the restricted area as well. Like, the officiating this season has been worse than seasons past, where there's 20,000 people in an arena. I don't get how you can be as blatantly terrible with your officiating. It made no sense. And Kyrie Irving should have gotten at least 2 or 3 calls tonight. Kevin Durant probably 3 or 4. And there was just, I don't know, the officiating, we don't normally pick on it because the game is bigger than that, but it cost the Brooklyn Nets some baskets tonight and probably gave them the Miami Heat a little bit of a sniff that they probably shouldn't have had.
At least 5 points, like you just mentioned, Jack, to end the half on that KD bucket, because he made the shot, he would have had a chance at an and one because it would have been a blocking foul. And then, you know, Bam went down the floor and hit the pull-up 3. That's 5 points right there, possibly 6.
Yeah, it's truly insane how poor the officiating was tonight. Like, I don't get it. Like, whether the glasses weren't working, whether the contacts didn't in, I have no idea. They were bird boxing the hell out of this performance tonight. But yeah, the Nets only had, what, 26 free throws. Obviously, some of that is junk time, garbage time. You know, we'll ran it down to 20 or so. I thought they could have easily had 25. I thought their purpose was better there.
Yeah.
And the Miami Heat got lucky a couple of times. That Duncan Robinson foul, Nick, what did you think of it?
The one they called on Kyrie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's trash. If they're going to call that, then Kyrie Irving's getting free throws every time down the floor. How many times has he been face guarded and the guys made contact after the play? Like, I didn't really even see the contact. I didn't watch the replay a million times. But, I mean, if you're calling that, then Kevin Durant's probably shooting 16 free throws a night and James Harden's probably shooting 20. You know what I mean? Like, that, just some of the calls that, like you said, Jack, I think, you know, we try not to get upset with the officiating, but when the Nets are playing hard and they're driving with purpose and aggressiveness, like, that's when you get the calls. When you're driving timid and you're avoiding contact, you don't get the calls. But I felt like the Nets were creating contact, driving to the rim, and they were aggressive, and Miami was out of position a lot, and they were just getting away with a lot of body contact that was just fouls. And like, Bam's a great player, but he shot 14 free throws tonight, and I think 2 of them were in garbage time. But like, if he's getting that many calls, then I think Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden should probably be getting more on the other end.
Yeah, look, James Harden had 9, a couple of them in junk time. His game we can dive into in a little bit, but focusing on the good in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, yeah, the purpose that the Nets did have in terms of wanting to put the pressure on the Miami Heat defense, and obviously they're lacking Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero and some of their other stars, I just thought that there was a much better game plan and execution from the Nets, especially in the first half. That fourth quarter was, who knows? We chuck it out, throw it in the bin.
Miami started, with a 13-0 run?
Yeah, and then the Nets had a little bit of a run themselves, 11-0 run, I think it was. But then there was like an 8-0 run from them. And then, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving just took over and just hit shot after shot after shot, some of them incredibly difficult. And it's just a luxury to have them out there. And Joe Harris was getting a lot of attention as well, and he was giving up shots to KD. Good shots became great shots. And his performance was incredible tonight. He set the tone in the first half. Absolutely awesome game from him. Despite a little bit of a lull in the Cleveland road trip, he got back to his best. But I thought that the initial tone setter for me, Nick, was Kyrie Irving taking a charge in the first quarter.
Yeah.
That signaled to me that I'm like, all right, he's going to be making plays on both ends of the floor. And even if he's making mistakes, he's going to have the aggressive mentality to be like, I'm going to impact this game, not just as a shot maker.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I thought that was, you know, very obvious from the beginning, especially when he got out in his stance, you know, past the three-point line. Sometimes we'll see him play defense and he doesn't even come past the three-point line. There were still a couple possessions this game where he did get lost. I thought a couple times on Kendrick Nunn he was a little bit late, but it was kind of, I don't want to say night and day from what we saw defensively in Cleveland, but there was a drastic difference. And there was, I think, a little bit more accountability too.
Yeah, big time. I thought that there was, it seemed to me that, and we saw Kyrie Irving coaching on the bench at times with some of the rotation guys. I just thought that it's interesting to see. I think this is going to be a collaborative approach, and we heard that in the preseason. And I think it's going to be resonate and for many, many games going forward. There's going to be nights where, you know, Kai's going to hit some big shots, make some defensive plays. You know, James Harden might not be feeling it. His mentality might not be there. And then you've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to make up for it. That's the luxury of having the three superstars. You know, James Harden still had, you know, his 11 assists or so, but, you know, he should have been much, much more aggressive. But plenty of great things we could say about I thought he looked better off the ball as well.
Yeah.
He looked like he wanted to get out in transition, looked like he wanted to move and not just create for himself, but, you know, cutting into the lanes and trying to break the zone. There aren't many better zone breakers that can hit mid-range shots and shots from all areas of the floor than Jeff Green, apparently. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I felt like Kyrie was more so part of the offense a lot for the first three quarters. And then that fourth quarter, like you mentioned, kind of being the zone breaker and doing a good job there. Should we talk about James Harden?
Yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts on his performance tonight, Nick? I think it was a little bit lackadaisical in terms of the aggression and the willingness to just, you know, get his own that we normally expect from James Harden. If anything, it's been a criticism of his in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like someone told him to, like, not have the green light, like that he's just not taking open shots. I think the one thing that's, like, slightly concerning that I think he needs to definitely start shooting more is a lot of those catch-and-shoot threes, not hesitate, not take a dribble, because that kind of disrupts the offense to an extent, and it just makes it a little bit easier to close out on him because he's not going to take that shot. I felt like he turned down three or four. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it tonight, but then there was also a couple possessions where he got to the elbow in the paint and he didn't attempt a shot. And it's like, yeah, maybe you don't want to pull up the mid-range, hit that little floater. We saw you know, shoot a lot against Orlando, a lot against Milwaukee. You know, that's a shot that's worked for you in the past too. So I think he definitely needs to be more aggressive. I will give some credit to Miami though, because when they're playing zone and he's on the floor with the second unit, it's going to be pretty hard for him to get to the bucket. You know what I mean? It's going to be, they're giving him a lot of attention, and the whole purpose of the zone is really to slow him down and not let him get the shot he wants. And I feel like he's just kind of trying to find his footing with the team, but I think, you know, KD, Kyrie need to be like, hey man, start just pulling the trigger, especially in the three ball. Like I said, those wide open catch and shoot threes, you need to take them.
Yeah, and then there was one or two, you know, in the closing couple of minutes where he did take and he missed them. You know, he didn't hit a three tonight, 2 of 8 from the field, 12 points, 11 assists, did have 6 turnovers as well. Some of those were bad catches from Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, but some of those were also maybe a bit too much heat and some just awfully timed passes on his drives where he would normally just get the contact rather than kicking it out. So I think that he's going to, it's a balance for him. It's a luxury to have that. Our other two superstars combined 59 points. Kyrie Irving had 18. I apologize for saying 10 or so earlier. 18 in the final period. But I think he will find it, Nick, because it's been such a key part of his game before that it would be shocking if he doesn't get that mentality back. And it is incredibly hard. I think Miami and Cleveland might be two of the best teams defensively in the league right now, especially systematically. And look, Cleveland did an incredible job of just making things tough for the Brooklyn Nets. And Miami, obviously, with their zone and their systems defensively, make things tough for you and James Harden overall. Because look, TLC, Bruce Brown, Reggie Perry, Jeff Green. And occasionally when you had Joe Harris out there, occasionally when and when you might sub in one of the other superstars, it was a little bit easier. But I think that against more teams than not, he's going to be able to find his own a little bit better. But at the same time, his craft of being able to just find spots on the floor where he can hit his shot, hit his step back, and also get to the line. And look, 8 of 9 free throws, it's decent enough. He did only make 2 field goals, and it took to like the second or third quarter for him to actually hit that. And it was the goaltend that was the first field goal. So it's a process, Nick, and it's one
that
I'm
tired.
I think some people are saying he's tired. Some people are saying that he's out of shape.
He did play 50 minutes on Wednesday, and it's the second night of a back-to-back, and he's not conditioned well right now. You know what I mean?
No. No, so, but he'll be better for the run. I think that this you don't want to look too much into a one game sample size, but you want to take away some things where it's just like, okay, what do I need to do better? Look, I'm passing the ball, I'm getting my teammates open, I'm looking incredible in any form of pick and roll passing. He's maybe one of the best pick and roll manipulators
of a defense in the NBA. Like in that pick and roll, like he makes DeAndre Jordan look so good. Like
Yeah, I completely agree, and DJ's doing a good job of slipping some of the blitzes as well. So I think that their tandem and chemistry has grown exponentially in such a short period of time. So whenever DJ's on the floor, if James Harden's out there, he's going to make him look at least somewhat positive. So yeah, I think that's one area we don't doubt. And it's interesting because it was like, oh, the one ball thing. Oh, is James Harden going to hog it too much? Is he going to be able to find Kyrie? It's just like, no, we actually need him to be better with the second unit. And you know whether that's Steve Nash changing it up and putting Kyrie Irving with the second unit a little bit more and putting Harden and Durant together a little bit more. I think it's going to be an experimentation process, like we mentioned, you know, acclimating them all. All of them are doing the right things and want to win. And I think tonight's performance, you know, we haven't had all three superstars clicking totally. And this was closer to it. If Harden had 20 points and, you know, hit a couple of threes, hit a couple of layups, had a couple more free throws, then it would have been like, okay, I'm pretty confident here going forward. I'm still confident though, Nick, because I think that the offense is going to take care of itself because these three superstars are that smart and are that savvy, especially offensively. But there's still some work to do, and there's still some work to do in many areas on the floor. But I think James Harden will find it. Do you have confidence in him eventually finding his touch?
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence. James Harden is one of the best basketball players in the NBA. Like, that's without a doubt. Like, he is extremely talented. I honestly think he was tired tonight. Like, I think, you know, the lack of conditioning caught up to him. Like I said, double overtime game against Cleveland, then coming the second night of a back-to-back, obviously played last night, played pretty big minutes in that game too. And I think also just trying to get a vibe with the team. And also I think something for the second unit that'll drastically help him is getting him a vertical spacer, like someone who can roll to the rim and finish. No disrespect to Reggie Perry. You know, he doesn't have that with his game yet. Maybe it's somebody he can develop. Not really confident finishing inside. Maybe it's, you know, Pell, maybe it's Nick Claxton, maybe it's somebody else that they can add down the line. But I think that'll be really important because, like I said before, James Harden manipulating the defense with that pick and roll, that's just beautiful to watch. Like, they're trying to force him to do one thing and he's turning it into an easy bucket for, you know, DeAndre Jordan, who hasn't necessarily looked amazing over the last year. So props to him and still finding other ways to impact the game. Like you said, I think the scoring really needs to pick up, but it's funny because it was such a criticism of him taking too many shots and now he's not taking enough.
Definitely. And also one really incredibly intelligent play towards the end of the game, fouling Bam Adebayo. I thought that was it shows his intelligence on the floor and allowed the Nets to just have a little bit more comfortability in the final 30 seconds of the game. So incredibly clever from James Harden there. And I guess dumb on the Miami Heat end for not calling the timeout. But James Harden punished him for that. And, you know, we've got to give credit where credit's due. And I'm just hoping for that 30-point triple-double for him sooner rather than later. And just the clicking and the gelling of these three superstars, it's a luxury. A luxury to have. So hopefully going forward, it leads to some good things.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Nets be a little bit more prepared for the zone in the next game. They have the luxury of playing Miami again, and obviously they're still going to be missing players. So you want to see them be able to attack that zone because I thought at different points they were a little confused in what they needed to do. And it's kind of funny is because they put out essentially a perfect lineup to kill a zone. You know, they have five floor spacers. They have, you know, three elite, maybe four elite ones in Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Joe Harris. And then you have Jeff Green out there who's been amazing from three this season. I think they just need a little bit more cohesion and maybe just a better plan to attack that zone. And that's an adjustment I want to see from Steve Nash and the team going into the next game.
Definitely. I think that the guys are smart enough to find the spots. I thought Jeff Green, like you mentioned, did an incredible job getting to the middle and sort of collapsing the zone a little bit, leaving guys open on the perimeter, whether it was Joe Harris, TLC, or whoever else, Bruce Brown occasionally. I think that the guys are smart enough offensively. That's where I'm really, really confident. They just have a nous about them to be like, you know what, we can hit shots from anywhere on the floor. And, you know, Jeff Green is continuing to be absolutely incredible in what he contributes to this team. So I think that there was a much better game plan and a much better mentality in breaking that zone tonight compared to when Cleveland ran it out against us in the previous two games.
Yeah, 100%. I thought Jeff Green did a nice job. Obviously, you have the luxury of having Kevin Durant, who can literally hit a shot anywhere on the floor over anybody, and that's always great. I think really the issue with the Nets was the mentality was great, the effort was great, but at certain points they would just have these stretches where they were lackadaisical, sloppy, and just kind of like throwing the ball to Miami or just kind of missing, you know, defensive assignments and giving up open shots. It's like that complete 48 minutes we really didn't see. I would say we probably saw like 32 minutes of good basketball. You know what I mean? And then there was a good chunk of time where they just constantly would let my... And it's not even like that bad stretch is just kind of bad. It's like really bad.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're allowing Miami to go on these big runs to get back in the game, because honestly, this should have probably been a blowout after the second quarter.
It really should have. You know, there was a that 10-point buffer that probably should have been 13 or 14 after the play that we talked about with Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk and Kevin Durant. But look, credit to the Miami Heat. Bam Adebayo was just on one as well. You know, he was hitting absolutely everything, and a truly incredible game from him. He's elevating himself to being
every role you could possibly get in a basketball game.
Yeah, look, he was getting the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving roles, you know, and he deserved it because he got them the Miami Heat on his back, and he was truly great and made the game a lot more interesting, especially that final quarter. But look, Nick, I think we chatted about KD, we chatted about Kyrie, we chatted about James Harden. We should have chatted about this guy right at the start, but Joey, goddamn buckets.
Yeah, I mean, that first half, that was one of probably the best first halves of his career. He was just lights out. The first quarter, he really set the tone, and it's kind of just the point of him playing with three superstars. Like, he's going to end up getting open shots like this, and he's going to have nights where he's constantly hot. And, like, he probably missed some that he thought he would hit, you know, normally. So 7 of 12 is still amazing, 58%. But if you ask Joe, he'd probably be like, I should have been 9 of 12 tonight because he was that good, and he's that good of a shooter. I also love the block he had on Goran Dragic.
Absolutely. I thought that was insane. You know, I think we don't necessarily expect that from Joe, but we're starting to be like, okay, a lot of people at the start of the game are like, okay, well, then why isn't Bruce Brown in the starting lineup? Why isn't Jeff Green in the starting lineup? And, you know, I mean, like, maybe to balance it out and give a bit more defense, it would be good to have one of those guys. But I think now you sort of solidified. I think this has to be the starting lineup going forward. And if Joe has his lulls up and down, don't change it. You know, I think there needs to be a semblance of consistency because these guys need to acclimate to those roles and everything. But yeah, Joe was truly, truly awesome. And, you know, he was hitting them on the pull-up. He was hitting them from mid-range as well. He looked just confident as hell. And the two-game slump didn't last very long at all. 8 of 14 from the field, 23 points, couple of dimes, couple of boards, a block as well. He made the game. His teammates did a really good job of finding him. But if you have Joe Harris alongside the three superstars, it just makes the offense just not just great, but incredible. Yeah. Because, and when Joe's hitting those threes as well, and hitting the mid-range pull-ups, and hitting the pull-up threes in transition, he was on one tonight. He had 6 threes in the first half and finished with 7 for the night. He is an incredible player, and he is going to be incredibly important for the Brooklyn Nets going forward.
Yeah, I thought, like you said, Jack, a really good game. Way to bounce back after 2, not even terrible games for him, just bad shooting nights, and he really came to play. And just the effort he brings on the floor is contagious, I think, especially with some of that off-ball movement with the starters. And he's also a pretty quick decision maker. I like the chemistry he's developing with Kevin Durant as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that he's easy to develop chemistry with because he was moving really, really well. It seemed to me that he was moving more often and moving quicker and, you know, going in and out, inside the lane, outside the lane, yep. going to different corners, cutting around the perimeter, screens, off-ball screens. And I thought that the team did a really good job of that tonight for him and him and others. I thought that there was much better action off the ball from the team overall.
Yeah, and I think he kind of sets a tone with that, you know, just being the off-ball player he is in terms of running. And that was a great point, Jack. He did make some more cuts inside, which kind of like he typically doesn't do. And I think maybe teams were starting to kind of get an idea of the pattern that he had. So switching it up is always important.
Definitely. You know, you got to give them different actions, different things to guard you with. But Nick, what did you think of DJ tonight, the other starter for the Brooklyn Nets?
Yeah, I didn't think DeAndre was bad. I didn't think he was amazing. I thought, you know, he was okay. He's never going to lock up Bam. That's a really bad matchup for him, just given how athletic Bam is and how well he moves out there. But, you know, he did a good job, you know, connecting with James Harden, connecting on his easy buckets. You know, there's always going to be a couple plays where you're like, come on, DJ, like that's a play you can make. But, you know, overall, he's kind of, you know, if this is like the average game from him, it's not the end of the world.
No, this is what you want from like a makeshift starting center, like a JaVale McGee,
Dwight Howard. 8 points, 8 rebounds.
Avika Zubac, exactly. 8 points, 8 rebounds. We criticized him incredibly heavily for his lack of activity on the glass. You know, he still shows athleticism and James Harden is invigorating him offensively. You know, if he needs to set the tone with his just activity on both ends of the floor. And I think that, you know, in general, that does reverberate across the team because he is a leader, you know, in a lot of respects. He just knows how to impact this team emotionally in a lot of ways. So if he continues to play like this, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, Jeff Green is probably going to be the closing center until someone else comes around, and it might just be Kevin Durant as well. Kevin Durant's closing when Jeff Green fouled out too. So for now, this is a decent enough DeAndre Jordan performance, and hopefully this is the baseline that we get from him going forward.
Yeah, if you only have to keep him on the floor for like 18 to 20 minutes, you know, that's okay. And then we have somebody else that hopefully can come in and fill in some more of the minutes, and then, you know, you're closing with Jeff Green. You know, that's not the end of the world. You know, and Reggie Perry, like, he'll have his good moments, he'll have his bad moments. Again, we talked about him in the last, you know, pod and the previous pods is he's a 57th overall pick and he's a rookie and he doesn't have much experience and this team hasn't necessarily had a ton of training camp and he probably doesn't even know all of his teammates that well. So he's just kind of learning on the fly and he's physically limited in certain ways, but you do love the toughness he brings to the team. I think he has a type of physicality that the Nets really miss at certain points.
Yeah, it's almost like he's over-exuberant, which is what you get from the rookies. And yep. You can't deny his energy, his hustle, his aggression. He just doesn't have the touch and feel and IQ of a more experienced NBA player. Like, you know, missing that layup off the incredible James Harden pick and roll in entry pass.
Yeah, he almost got like stuffed by the rim.
Yeah. But then, you know, he did have some nice moments as well. I do like him when he's out on the perimeter and guarding guys rather than when he's under the rim. So the switching style of defense does tend to suit him more occasionally. But yeah, there's going to need to be some reinforcements. And like we mentioned, Norvell Powell is on the way, hopefully sooner rather than later. Nicholas Claxton even more so, hopefully sooner rather than later. We saw his dad jump on Instagram saying that he could be back soon too. So look, it was a much better performance from Reggie Perry. It was a bit erratic in saying that, but you're going to get that from a young rook.
Yeah, and he also laid out Mo Harkless. Like, I mean, that was like a truck stick level hit. I mean, that just is an example of how bad the refs were. Like, he clearly fouled the shit out of Mo Harkless, and he injured him, and they didn't blow the whistle. And I saw the ref put his hand up and about to blow the whistle, and he just didn't do it. So I was just kind of confused by that play. But like we said, the officiating was more than questionable. What'd you think about TLC tonight?
The fact that I didn't think like, oh man, he was so bad or he was so good is just like, it's a tick for him, isn't it? Because normally it's like, oh, he's just here, he's there, he's doing too much, he's not doing enough. I thought that, you know, you got 3 points from him, got 4 assists, which I think is surprising, but I thought that he moved the ball well, like he wasn't taking shots for himself, like he does occasionally. And I thought he showed a bit more steadiness than we've probably seen from him.
Yeah, I think he's improving as a passer. I think, like you said, Jack, you know, smaller role, 15 minutes. If you're not really talking about him, that's usually good. And he didn't have any really tough defensive assignments tonight, so that always works out well for him. Bruce Brown didn't necessarily get a ton of minutes tonight, only about 16 minutes and 54 seconds, but close to 17. But I still felt his impact out there, and he grabbed 8 boards, and he had 8 points. So, you know, he matched DJ.
and he had two offensive boards as well. I just thought that as soon as he was out there, I think like his mentality is like, I'm going to get every rebound that I can in every single minute that I can. And you know, a rebound every 2 minutes isn't too bad at all. If he's playing per 36, that's 18 boards. And I thought as well, he hit that three ball, which was good. I like him taking it, take one or two a night. And I think on the season, if he's going to be 30% or so, that's, I'm happy with that, because it gives you a level of respectability. And he doesn't, a shot that he doesn't miss is that floater. You know, he's, it's a goddamn pretty shot. And I like what he does. You know, he just provides an energy. He was moving a lot. You know, he gave away probably a couple of fouls here or there that were ticky-tacky, but you know, I love what he brings to this team. And you know, I want to see 20 minutes plus for him, because he just provides energy. And you know, plus two, the only positive off the bench, it shows that when he's out there, he makes winning plays.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, like you said, he just provides a positive impact, and he fills a need, because your superstars aren't going to necessarily dive in the ball for the floor. You know what I mean? They're not going to be fighting with guys for jump balls and stuff like that. That's where a guy like Bruce Brown comes in, and he likes doing that stuff like we talked about. So credit to him. Another really solid game. Hopefully he's starting to build more trust and confidence from Steve Nash.
Definitely, definitely. Hopefully this is, you know, a little bit of a taster for Bruce, and going forward, he can get some much more consistent minutes. But yeah, in saying that, that he makes the right plays. He knows what to do. He knows his limitations and he knows his strengths. And that's something that, you know, I think he's providing value to this team quite consistently. You know, if there's a plus minus stat on the year, I'd be surprised if Bruce Brown isn't one of the leaders in that. All of our starters, it was good to see, were positive in the plus minus as well, which is something you'd expect from a team as talented as their starting five. But in saying that, Nick, Jeff Green, 26 minutes off the bench, did foul out, had a tough time guarding Bam, but you know who didn't? 11 points for him, 3 of 4 from 3. That 3 ball is just absolutely money right now. 4 of 8 from the field, 5 boards, 3 assists. What did you think of his performance?
Yeah, another really nice night for Jeff Green, you know, and he's just continuing to provide great value on that contract. Like we said, scorching from 3 provides you the versatility. Obviously, Bam's a center, and Jeff Green's an undersized center, so it's not necessarily going to work out great for him. But I thought he fought through it, did the best that he could. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about Jeff Green, especially in that contract. It's going to be hard for me to be upset with Jeff Green. You know what I mean? Just given what where his skill is, where his talent is, and his expected role coming to this team, he's really killed expectations, I think, up to this point.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I'm incredibly happy with what he's bringing to this team on both ends of the floor. That 3 ball, you know, I expect it to go in now. And that's something where you don't expect necessarily from like that sort of role player like Wilson Chandler, Jared Dudley type. But, you know, you want the ball in his hands because he just does the right thing, whether it's shooting it, whether it's, you know, moving it, you know, and getting crispy with it, or whether it's taking a mid-ranger, whether it's back and down. He's just incredibly, incredibly intelligent and savvy as a veteran. And so damn important to this team. It's evergreen content that we keep saying about Jeff Green, but he keeps goddamn doing it. Like, he's just an incredibly steady and impactful performer for the Brooklyn Nets, and we'd be struggling without him as our sort of, you know, closing five, because then it would put an even greater impetus on Kevin Durant. So look, he's been immense for this team in the value that he has provided.
Yeah, he's been crucial to this team. But Jack, I got an interesting stat for you. The Nets recorded 0 steals tonight.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that some of the way Miami were playing offensively, they were playing much, let's say, risk-free in terms of what they were sort of doing. And I think that they're a hard team to sort of break down. But at the same time, you know, the Net, and they had 8 themselves. I don't look into it overly. I'm sure Bruce Brown wouldn't be happy with that. He's a dude that loves to get his steals on the board. And they did only had 8 turnovers as well. But I did think that the defense tonight was much better. And I think a lot of that came down to the rebounding, Nick. And I'll give you a stat, 47-30 in the boards in Brooklyn's favor.
Yeah, I thought the Nets were better on the boards. They started more dominant to, you know, start the game. But yeah, I think the defense had moments where they were really successful and then moments where they were kind of just lackadaisical. Like I said, you know, they couldn't completely do it. And there was a couple possessions where it's just like they gave up an open shot. And the reason I just look at the steals is like they're missing some of their best ball handlers and they still can't kind of force a team to make some bad decisions. I just feel like they they're just still not really putting enough pressure on the other team. And maybe they never will because they lack that elite defense, defensive players. But, you know, you still kind of expect maybe a little bit more from, you know, a Miami Heat team that's missing a Jimmy Butler, missing an Avery Bradley, missing a Tyler Hero. Like, it's a nice win. But I think overall, like, the Nets still could have won this game in a better fashion. And obviously some of that's the officiating, like we discussed, sloppy down the stretch. But it's still doesn't feel like a great win, if that makes sense. Obviously, I'm never going to complain about winning, but...
No. Look, there's still a lot of work to do. And I think the Nets need to be a bit more aggressive defensively. Realize, especially out there, I think that when you have guys like Bruce Brown, like James Harden, like, you know, these guys are good at stripping dudes, are good at, you know, reading passing lanes and stuff. Kevin Durant's good at that as well. So I think that there's a time and a place to be more aggressive. I think the Nets were steadier defensively, as I alluded to, but they still have they can turn it up a little bit. They can turn it up a notch. So it's a process, and, you know, it's a baby step forward tonight, and hopefully going forward, it continues to improve and grow, whether that's with additions on the roster, whether that's schematically. You know, we heard before the game, sort of the Steve Nash talk about, you know, that they don't want to necessarily change what they're doing. But I'm intrigued to hear what you sort of think, Nick, because we chatted about it probably quite in depth after the Cavs game yesterday. But in terms of the schemes and in terms of the tangibles, the intangibles, the mentality defensively, how did the Brooklyn Nets look tonight?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Jack. They had improved from what they did in Cleveland, but still not great. They allowed a Miami Heat team to score 124 points. That was missing arguably maybe, you know, two of the three best offensive players in Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero. You know what I mean? And like, Bam was cooking, but they didn't really ever send an adjustment to kind of make it tougher for him. And I get it. Duncan Robinson out there running off screens and things. But still, I'm not going to feel amazing about their defense, because like, the Nets ultimately still won this game is because they were godly offensively. They shot 53% from the field, 51% from three, and they did that with 17 turnovers and dropped, you know, 128 points. So it's like, yeah, they won this game. They beat the Heat team. But I think, like, for me to be impressed, especially against a Heat team like this, they got to hold them under 100. You know what I mean? And, like, Miami didn't even shoot well from three. Like, they shot under 30% from three, and they still dropped 124 points. Like I mentioned, all the players are missing, and I'm not trying to, like, ruin the parade, but there's still plenty, like you said, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And look, some of that you credit to Bam Adebayo going out of his mind. So, you know, you can't defend certain things, but also, like you mentioned, there are certain things that you can defend and can be better at. And look,
well, I mean, Miami just ran the same freaking play, like, seven plays in a row. They said, hey, we're going to ISO Bam on the left wing, and we're left post with Jeff Green, and we're just going to let him go to the work. And the Nets just kind of were like, okay. And then Bam scored, what, five straight possessions?
Yeah, no, he was awesome. And then also, like I mentioned, DeAndre Jordan and Kyrie Irving, the pick and roll, it's money for the opposing team. It's barbecue chicken, absolutely, Nick. So that's something that really does need to improve. It's going to get attacked. If DeAndre Jordan is starting in a postseason series, then now if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks or the Sixers or the Celtics, that's just like I'm running it a million times. And unless those two can get better in terms individually and you know in synergy, then there's going to be a massive weakness there, and it's going to continue to be.
There is a lot of confusion on the weak side on those plays. You know, James Harden was guarding, I actually don't even know his name on the Miami Heat, which is rare for me not to know a player, Gabe Vincent. He was guarding him in the corner, and he would pull up to the wing and go to the top of the key. So it was pulling James Harden away from having that weak side help. And the Heat ran that pick and roll, that same type of action, I want to say four or five times. And it either ended up in Bam getting a good shot, Goran Dragic getting a floater in the paint. It just kind of gets too easy, you know, and that's something they have to address. But, you know, Jack, getting back to your other point, I never really answered your question about Steve Nash's comments on the defense. And I understand his mindset and wanting to master one style of defense before moving on to the next one, especially if he believes that this is going to be the defense that they need to use the most in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to have some other things up your sleeve, like, you know, to be the opposite of what the Milwaukee Bucks. And look, the Milwaukee Bucks have done a good job of changing, you know, this season, I think, especially offensive and defensively, trying some new things. But the Nets have a completely new nucleus to their roster, and they need to figure out some things before they try and, you know, reinvent the wheel in that sort of respect. And, you know, some of the lack of execution can be made up by hustle plays from guys like Bruce Brown and such, but and that there's plenty of work to be done from all of the guys on the roster. And, you know, I think Kevin Durant's presence almost covers up a lot of holes because, you know, he's such a good weak side helper. He's such a good rebounder. And without him, the weaknesses are made even more glaring.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I think also, like, I'll be intrigued to see if Steve Nash elects to go with different styles of defense after essentially they master that certain style that they're using right now, like the switching style that they're running right now. Like maybe after that, they'll go to a zone. Maybe they'll play some more drop coverage, switch things up. So it's going to be an intriguing kind of aspect of the Nets. And like they have the rest of the season, but at the end of the day, it's still really not that much time to kind of solidify yourself with a defensive identity for a postseason against some really, really good teams.
No, absolutely. And in saying that, I can't remember who it was that posted on Twitter. Like, you know, the Detroit Pistons championship team were an anomaly in terms of their defensive identity. Maybe the Brooklyn Nets, if they win a championship, will be one of the few teams in 25 years. I think there's only one team in 25 years that has finished better than 15th or worse than 15th defensively and actually won a chip. Maybe the Brooklyn Nets are the ones that make history. I hope not. I hope they get into the top 10, 12 range. But at this point, they don't look like it. And I remember my guy, Nick Busing, saying on the pod that in the past sort of 3, 4, or 5 games, the Nets have been the third worst defensive team. And look, I was surprised that they weren't the worst in saying that. They were with the Sacramento Kings and the Minnesota Timberwolves. So not necessarily the most illustrious company.
Yeah, it's really strange, too, just given some of the teams they've played over the stretch. Like Cleveland not being a great offensive team, lighting them up obviously isn't great. And then obviously tonight, Miami missing so many players. But then you go back to the Bucks game and it's like, oh, they played the Bucks and it was kind of just like the same thing. It was just a shootout. Is every night going to be a shootout? Is that a style that you can win? I mean, if there's a team that has the best chance in NBA history about winning a shootout every night, the Nets are one of them, just given the offensive talent they have. It'll be intriguing how this kind of develops through the season. Ideally, like you said, Jack, you want to see them at least be maybe like the 14th best defense. You know, you don't have to be top 10. You don't have to be top 5. Just make it somewhat difficult. Make them earn their points. And I feel like the problem with the Nets right now is too many times they just give points away where it's just like, hey, you want a wide open three? Here you go.
Yeah, and some of that is lack of communication. Some of that is laziness. Some of that is just not being switched on. You know, I think that the Nets almost are like, you know, we can beat you. And they revert back to their offensive tendencies and being like, all right, well, Kyrie Irving's going to hit a mid-ranger here, falling away with one hand or whatever. Kevin Durant's going to hit a pull-up three in your face. You know, we're going to be fine. And I think that they need to get out of that mentality. They need to be like, all right.
They need to be humbled.
Yeah, they need to be humbled big time. And if the Cleveland Cavs, and I think they need to be humbled as a big three. So it's just like Kevin Durant, like I said, doesn't cover up all the weaknesses and paints over those, you know, little holes and such. But Nick, there's a good comment here from James Harden via Chris Mulholland. And I wanted to bring it to you. You know, I don't want to go into all these comments, but this one stuck out to me. I just want to come in and get a feel for what's going on. I can obviously be a little more aggressive. How much longer are we going to allow, I guess, James Harden to, quote unquote, get a feel?
I think, to be fair, you probably have to give him almost 5 to 10 games. Like, he's learning the team on the fly. And we talked about this in the offseason, and I remember speaking about, like, how difficult it would be to get James Harden, you know, intertwined with this team midseason. You know what I mean? Just given the type of style that he's played for so long, the habits that he has, and obviously, you know, playing with Kyrie and Kevin Durant is something different. So, you know, I think 5 to 10 games, and then really towards the end, expect him to start picking up and picking his, you know, moments. I think he really is trying to get a feel where guys like the ball, where they like shots. And let's be honest, like, he played on the Houston Rockets. Like, he probably doesn't know much about a lot of these players that are on the Brooklyn Nets. I don't think he's the same level of like scouting report player that Kevin Durant is, that, you know, KD honestly, I think, knows everybody's strengths and weaknesses in the entire NBA, where James Harden, it might take him a second to kind of learn, like, oh, this is where Joe likes the ball. Oh, TLC is good in this spot. You know, oh, Reggie Perry's not that quick. I can't hit him on that roll.
Yeah, definitely. And he also did allude to he's focused on making sure that the second unit guys are getting shots. You know, you want them to be engaged and such, but at the same time, it doesn't matter if those guys have 4 or 5 shots and you have an extra 10 compared to them, because it is a higher percentage shot you taking an ISO possession over TLC taking a driving three or whatever. You know, I would assume that the numbers would back that up too, especially the last couple of years. So, you know, he'll find that balance there, like I alluded to earlier, but it is going to be a feeling out process, you know, 5 to 10 games, whatever the timeline is. But James Harden needs to find. He's playing like a passive point guard right now, and he's I don't mean like to Chris say Paul. Passive. Yeah, that's what I saw. Yeah, he's a facilitator rather than a facilitator and scorer, like a Kyrie Irving, like a Damian Lillard, like a Stephen Curry. These sort of dudes who are scoring point guards. And James Harden is a scoring guard. He's a shooting guard by nature and by size. You know, Mike D'Antoni turned him into this heliocentric point guard, shooting guard, combo guard. So, you know, he knows how to score, and hopefully he can show off that in the games going forward, because I'm pretty confident with his passing as well. He's had like 11, 12, 13 quite consistently. So,
Do you think he's a better passer than D'Angelo Russell?
Oh, yeah, easily. You know, James Harden is probably only behind the likes of LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, the elite of the elite. And he's probably on the fringes of the elite passers in the league, and if not in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been my favorite Nets passer since Jason Kidd. Like, just some of the passes he's making out there are just ridiculous. I'm kind of intrigued, and obviously this is information that we're probably not going to be able to get, but how much is Steve Nash telling James Harden to run point guard? How much is he telling to be aggressive and trying with that mindset? And how much does he want him to play within the offense instead of going ISO? I'd just be intrigued to kind of find that out and seeing if, because he mentioned, I think he had a comment pregame where it's saying like, we don't want to go my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn. He wants more of a natural offense. So it'll be interesting to see how they adapt, especially with that second unit, because it does at times, you know, lack other offensive firepower.
Yeah, Kyrie, James Harden, take your turn, my dude. We don't need to take eight shots tonight and have 11 assists. You had the same shots as Jeff Green. You should always have more than 12 shots a night. And you should have been, you know, if Kevin Durant had 19, Kyrie Irving had 17, James Harden should have 15. That's the balance that I would like to see. And Joe Harris isn't going to have 14 every night either. So you take away, what, five of those shots from Joe, two of those shots from Jeff Green, and you give them to James Harden. And look, it's not to say that Jeff Green was poor and Joe Harris either. We just alluded to how great they have been. But James Harden with the second unit, you know, you take away, you know, four shots. I don't know. The balance needs to be better. I'm not sure what the shot distribution needs to be. I'm
just looking at it. It also could help picking up the pace, just get more shots.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's when it off a make, you know, he's quite methodical. But if he, you know, runs a little bit more, you know, it maybe some of it, like you alluded to, Nick, is a little bit of conditioning and all those little things. But he's gonna find it. But there shouldn't be a game for the rest of the season where he has less than 10 shots and 8 shots tonight. That ain't it.
Yeah, and I also feel like, you know, the Nets are going to get criticized more for the big three stretch if they do have struggles. Obviously, they already had the two against Cleveland, and then this game wasn't necessarily amazing. But if it was the beginning of the season, they started out slow, I think people would be less worried. It's just happened that it's like during the season people are freaking out. Because I saw a couple stats from like the Heat's first 10 games, the Warriors' first 10 games, and they weren't necessarily the most prettiest records, you know what I mean? And those teams ended up being fine. So like we've said, like the Nets said, of like the Nets players have said, like, it's going to take time for us to find our rhythm. And like, I'm not even sure we've gotten a real taste of what this team can be yet.
No, you know, the glimpses that we've seen are there, but I think it's been more individually rather than as a cohesive unit. You know, we saw Joe Harris go off, we've seen Kevin Durant consistently go off like an MVP player, like one of the best players in the league, as he is. You know, Kyrie Irving doing what he does. And look, I'm going to be intrigued to see, you know, the if he had have done this on a weekday, what the next day takes from him would be on ESPN and such, because you can't necessarily make the arguments that he did anything wrong tonight, other than what we alluded to with the pick and roll defense and some of those sort of things. But yeah, I think the Nets will figure it out, Nick, but DJ said it yesterday. Rome wasn't built in the day. Championships aren't won in January either.
Yeah, I'm intrigued definitely to watch the next game against Miami, especially because they're going to be shorthanded once again. And, like, you know, Eric Spoelstra does a great job coaching his team, making sure they're ready. But I feel like the Nets, it would be nice for them to kind of have a blowout or just a tone setter or just a cleaner game overall. Like, Miami's probably going to shoot better from three. Some guys are probably going to play a little bit better. But you'd like to see them be able to maintain a 10-point lead throughout most of the game, or, you know, maintain a 15-point lead. And obviously basketball is a game of runs, but you have some of the best run stoppers in the league. You arguably have three of the best on your team.
Yeah, definitely. So, and look, they're still like they're half a game out of being the two seed, and they haven't figured it out yet. You know, it's been 18 games. They've played the most games in the league. You know, they're 3-0 against teams ahead of them. And, you know, we're still yet to burst the paces, but, you know, good wins against the Celtics, the Sixers, and the Bucks. I think the Nets are in a decent enough spot, Nick. You know, you look at the Miami Heat in their first iteration, they struggled. They were like 500 to start the season.
Yep.
And everyone was burning the Miami down. I think the Nets are going to find their rhythm. It just sucks because in a more condensed season and with less practices and all these protocols in place, it is going to be harder than ever to find that synergy and chemistry.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Jack, especially the lack of practices. I mean, when you're having a game almost what feels like every other day, it's really hard to get practice time in because you don't want to mess with guys' conditioning, especially like guys coming off injury and things along those lines. You don't want to push them too far. So it's kind of Steve Nash finding a balance. Like, he couldn't have picked a tougher year to start head coaching.
Yeah, definitely. And look, it's good to see as well, Tyler Johnson via Christian Winfield is sprinting up and down, hitting corner threes with team staffers. He had another DNP, but he can maybe produce for this team at certain points going forward. I thought that the rotation tonight was probably better from Steve Nash. What did you think of his coaching? Sometimes I thought he could have called, you know, in some of those extended runs from the Miami Heat. I know that's not his mentality, but he could have called some more timely timeouts. But I thought overall, decent enough.
Yeah, I thought he was decent enough to get the win. When you have this, you know, talented of players, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a huge coaching impact. I would say, you know, kind of like we've brought up in the past, I'd like to see him get a little bit more aggressive with the refs. You know, especially I think like your players would appreciate that a little bit too. Not to say that they don't respect Steve Nash or anything like that, but I think it does help, especially when they miss blatant calls. You know, they're always going to have the 50-50 calls that don't go your way, and that's going to happen. But when there's calls that are just obvious as hell and they're not giving them to you, you have to kind of let them know they need to do a better job, because sometimes they need kind of a wake me up too. What'd you think about Landry Shamet getting a DNP as well?
I kind of expected it. You know, if you're not going to perform, then look, you don't deserve to play. But, you know, tonight could have been a night to throw him out there and get his offensive rhythm. But I don't think it's going to be a consistent thing when you have your best player in the league coming back, the best player in your team as well coming back. You know, he automatically replaces a guy who didn't make a shot in the last game. So it's fine. I did think that Steve Nash, like you mentioned, Nick, does need to be a bit more forceful as a leader. And he also did have a nice little challenge call that was as blatantly obvious of a block as I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that was actually a pretty big challenge call, because KD would have had, you know, ended up having 5 fouls later in the game, which could have, you know, allowed the Heat maybe to even make a bigger run. But Jack, anything else you want to talk about with this game?
Look, I don't think we can probably take the most away from this game, Nick. That seems to be just like a game where it's just like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, they went hot and they got hot, and James Harden made a nice, smart, savvy play. He did allude that it was his call and not the coach's call to make. He was telling the Nets media after the game. So, again, an example of his intelligence. And Joe Harris being in a goddamn flamethrower. I think I might have to do a bit of a video breakdown of that one, because I always love doing Joey Buckets breakdown. But, yeah, not necessarily the biggest takeaways from this performance. Probably one that we won't be looking back on and saying it was a big turning point.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, hey, we're a better team. We're going to get the win. You're missing some players, and we did enough to get the W. It wasn't anything crazy. There's a couple nice flashes. I think, like, just with the staggering minutes in the rotation, I think keeping 2 of 4 in terms of Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden, 2 of 4 of those guys on the floor at all times, I think makes it easier. You know what I mean? Because then if it's James Harden with a second unit, he has an elite floor spacer in Joe Harris. Obviously, we know what Kyrie and KD can do. We know what KD and Joe can do. Kyrie and Joe. You know what I mean? I think it just kind of provides a little bit more offensive stability. And you don't necessarily need, you know, four really good offensive players on the floor at the same time. You know, 2 can usually do the trick, especially during most stints.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really savvy point, Nick, and it certainly does help. And whether it's not Joe, maybe Landry Shamet once he gets his 3-ball going at a certain point in time. But again, it'll help all the teams. And like we've alluded to before, that, you know, Steve Nash needs to find the tools and the lineups and the rotations to make these guys succeed on the floor. Give them all the tools and the everything that they need. And the players need to be able to execute when that is given to them. And I thought that both the players and the coaching staff were decent enough tonight. It wasn't, again, like I mentioned, something I'm going to be rewatching, except for some Joe Harris highlights. And it still disappoints me that there isn't enough Joe Harris love from the national. ESPN didn't post anything on him. Bleacher Report didn't post anything on him. But my OnlyFans will have plenty of content after the game. Check it out.
But talking about players, what did you think of Spencer Dinwiddie shooting threes before the game?
Loved it, Nick. The DPE, I think that the Nets are going to get punished for it somehow because they got the disabled player exception the other day, as we alluded to, but Spencer's already shooting threes. Like, it's going to be over. The only thing that was even more intriguing to me was Kevin Durant's nice little fresh cut.
Oh, yeah, KD did have a fresh cut. And like we mentioned on the previous show, that Spencer Dinwiddie will still be eligible to play if he's able to return, long as you know, he's healthy. He can come back on the floor because you're granted the exception based off the idea that he won't return. And typically when you have an ACL surgery, you're not expected to return. So the Nets should be okay. And I think, you know, hopefully someone told Spencer that, like we mentioned, I don't think he was up to date on the rules, but, you know, fresh cut for KD. Hopefully we see the Nets kind of have maybe a little bit more dominant performance. Oh, go ahead, Jack.
Wanted to ask Nick the comments from Kyrie Irving on his Instagram account. When I woke up to see them, a lot of the time it seems to me that I wake up to some form of Nets news. Your opinion and your thoughts in the moment when you saw Kyrie take to the Instagram stories?
To be honest, I read it quickly. I didn't really deep dive into it. I'm not going to be honest. I don't really care. Like, I don't really care. Like, you can post what you want on social media and say what you want. It's fine. Like, what I'm really focused on, especially with Kyrie Irving, is what he does on the court, because there's so many different factors with him outside the court. And I'm not criticizing or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, my biggest concern with Kyrie is just what he does on the court. And I think, you know, what he said did make sense, but it's still kind of a situation where people can take it in a positive way or a negative way. And it's kind of just allowing the media to get more clicks to an extent.
Yeah, look, as he alluded to, we will be on that stage, a stage where the best of the best meet, you know, the main stage, where those who can do and those who can not talk about, those who cannot talk about those that are doing. If you're rolling with us, great, let's rock. If you're not, you know you don't want to rock. What was the other part there? But yeah, whatever. But if you're not, you know you want to talk about our greatness anyway. And we saw Kevin Durant respond with Speak On It, King. And Andre Drummond even jumped into the comments as well. Future Brooklyn Nets Andre Drummond, maybe. Who knows?
A younger version of DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, man. That's not a lot to look forward to.
Luckily, Corey's not here. But I think that wraps it up. Like we said, hopefully the Nets give us a little bit more in the next game, but overall, we'll always take a win. Jack, always a pleasure, and big thanks to everybody for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.